I'm your host, Lee W. Johnson, and welcome to my podcast, where I talk about all things related to magic, witchcraft, demonolatry, and a whole load of other related things. If you would like to find out more about me, get in touch with me, or hire me for a service, please go to my website, leewjohnson.com, or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. Right, so I realized that I use the term union with divinity quite a bit, or union with the divine. And I did realize that a lot of people may not actually realize what I'm talking about here. Being me, I'm a bit different. So I wanted to just explain that in some detail today. And hopefully going forward that will explain a lot of the content that I create. Alright, so let's have a look at that. Alright, so when it comes to this term union with the divine, I think many of us view it in terms of a Christian thing, or even further than that, it's found in Judaism, it's found in Hinduism, it's found in practically every tradition that we find. But the usual way of viewing that is creates a separation, which is kind of the opposite of what you're trying to accomplish with union with the divine. So, you know, I think we need to get into this a bit deeper and try and understand it. And if you do really go deep into the older traditions, you'll probably find that my explanation is probably what they're explaining. But on a surface level, for many people, it's just that it's the union of man and God, or the union of two opposites and bringing them into union. But when we speak about the divine, there is no opposition, there is no opposite. And again, I wrote a blog post before making the video and the words just flowed out of me, so I'm going to read quite a bit from the actual blog post itself. So when it does come to this union, what we usually find in explanations is that we have ourselves and then we have a God, or God itself. And this union that we are trying to attain with this divine being is one that we are removing ourselves from the pain and suffering of this world. So we overcome samsara, and we move ourselves away from that and closer to this divine spiritual aspect. But in this case, again, that is usually considered to be a singular entity, and that's not what I consider God to be. So we have this aspect of a person who is trying to move to God. So that's two singular aspects, two separate realities, two separate beings which are trying to come into union. But in order to do that, you've got to move away from something to something. Okay. The other aspect of this is in terms of an avatar, where the aspect of the divinity comes down into humanity. We can see this in terms of Jesus Christ, for instance. But we find it a lot in something like Hinduism. There have been a lot of avatars. For instance, I mean, Vishnu, one of Vishnu's avatars, and I can't remember the number now, I've forgotten. I think it's 9 in total. One of them was Krishna. So we have these avatars, that physical bodies that get filled with a particular spirit, particular deity, a particular god or goddess, and come down into humanity. But again, that's a singular being. It's not this God, this union with divinity that I'm actually referring to. One of the really simple symbols here would be to look at the hexagram. So the hexagram is two triangles overlapping, one facing up, one facing down, or the point facing up, point facing down. And this is often considered to be a symbol of that union of man and God, but a union of opposites in any instance. It could be masculine and feminine, it could be water and fire. But what we're really after here is the combination of the union of binary into non-binary. So in order to understand this union with divinity, we first need to understand what this divinity is. And this is going to obviously differ from person to person, but in order for me to explain how and why I use the term union with divinity or union with the divine, I first need to explain how I understand and view this divine essence, this divine power, what people often call God. So it's divinity, it's God, it's the great architect, it's the mind, it's the all, it's many things. Actually, I'm going to start reading the blog post from this point, because this is where words just started flowing. So this might be a bit lengthy. You'll have to excuse me while I read. The divine or God, the architect, the source, the force, the all, the mind, whatever we wish to call it, is the everything and the nothing. This is a force or power that extends into all things that we can comprehend, think of, examine, interpret, define, touch, taste, smell, hear, and see. It is everything conceivable. When we say conceivable, this is all things that we can imagine, seen and unseen. However, this divine power is also the no-thing, therefore everything beyond that which is conceivable, everything that we cannot understand, examine, perceive, define, or even imagine. It is the space between things, the void, the abyss, the nothingness, but even these things are words that will excite the imagination and create visual stimuli. So the no-thing is everything that you cannot imagine, cannot visualize. Now, if the divine is that which I outlined above, we cannot move from one thing to another. We cannot ascend or even descend. We cannot move away from, run away from, or toward. We cannot go to, and therefore, it is not a case of moving one body, the person, to another body, God. The divine aspect is everywhere, whether we can see it or not, whether we can imagine it or not. And that means it is in your own body, in the screen you are reading this on or hearing my voice from. It is the clothes you wear, the bed you slept in, the food you ate. It is your neighbor, the dog that is barking down the road, the car that went by. The divine is all things. The divine is also all things beyond these physical aspects. It is the emotions you feel, the pain, the sorrow, the guilt, the happiness, the joy, the love. It is the spiritual path you follow, the beings you may work with or worship, the demons, the angels, the gods and goddesses. This divine is also all things beyond that. It is beyond the cosmos and all the celestial bodies. It is beyond the light and the dark. It is beyond the good and the evil that we like to define to make ourselves feel better about our own existence. Is what he did good? Am I a good person? Was what he did bad? I'm better than that person because they are evil. This divine power is here, right now. We cannot move toward it. We can, however, become aware of it. Yet, this is still not becoming aware of two bodies, yourself and God. It is becoming aware of everything and nothing. This idea of union with the divine is about union with everything. It is uniting with the divine element in the physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. Union with the divine element within the seen and the unseen world. Union with the divine beyond that which is everything. In order to do this, we can start with ourselves. Recognize and become aware of the divine within yourself. You are divinity because divinity is everything. Recognize the god or goddess that is you. Once you can connect with that divinity and bring your own separated consciousness into union with your own divinity, then you can start to expand your awareness beyond yourself, extend it to the room you are in, and recognize everything in it as being divinity. The desk, the chairs, the pot plants, the annoying fly, the trail of ants, everything is the divine. Become aware of that and extend further to the trees and the animals outside, the birds in the sky, the fish in the pond, the buildings in the street, the power station, the bus stop, everything. Recognize everything as divinity. What you may start to find is that you realize how precious everything is and how connected we are to everything. Some people treat others, animals, and the earth as their own stomping ground, bringing abuse and trash, spoiling it, turning buildings into dumps, destroying land. When you realize the union you have with divinity, you realize how much that hurts you directly. Every time someone hits a dog, you feel it. Every time someone throws another bag of garbage on a pile that is polluting a stream, it suffocates you. Now extend beyond that to the entire world, all of the people, animals, and plants. Continue. Extend beyond our planet and stretch out into the universe and beyond that, taking in the entire cosmos, from the quantum to the most immense, from that which is zero to the one. It is all divine. So when I say union with the divine, this is what I mean. Some would not be able to handle this, and that is fine. It is a process to learn how to deal with that pain and move beyond it, to recognize it as all part of that divinity. It also means that you take everything under your wing and you care for it all, just as you would care for yourself. It is a challenge because you will need to take action and do something about it. Like I said, it's not for everyone. All right, so I think that explains what I mean when I talk about this concept of union with the divine. And I, as I said, I do talk about it a lot, bringing things into harmony and balance and equilibrium, bringing opposing forces into that balance and then moving forward with it. But this is the goal we're really going for. But the difficulty is that when we talk about this union with divine, it tends to become very selfish. We have people trying to reach enlightenment, and we have enlightenment all the time, over and over and over again. But people are trying to ascend to this higher level of being, this higher vibration. Trying to remove themselves from the physical and material into the spiritual, when there cannot be a separation if we are going to do that. The physical and the material is the spiritual and the astral. It's all the same thing. It's all part of the same thing. It's all divinity. So we cannot remove ourselves from it in order to get to it. We are already in it. We just need to become aware of it. But we have these people trying to reach enlightened states and trying to ascend to these higher states. And it's, as I said, it becomes almost selfish because there's a lack of understanding of what it is. Union with the divine is ascending to those higher levels, those higher states of consciousness, is about encompassing everything, because you come to a realization that divinity is all of these things. If you don't get to that realization, you're not ascending to anything. You're not becoming enlightened. You are just going by rote of what other people are telling you and the misunderstanding that you have. So that's the concept that, how I understand it, how I, when I talk about it, that's what I'm talking about, that's what I mean. So, will probably make things easier for people to understand when they're watching my content and reading my content. If you do want to read the blog, it's on my website, lewjohnson.com. As I said, what I'm doing now, instead of just recording the videos, I'm writing a blog post before I do the Monday videos. So they're all going on there first, and then Monday comes along. Okay. Welcome to my channel. I'm Lee Johnson and this is the Ask Lee, so therefore I guess it's the Ask Me segment of the week. And if you don't know what this is, then you can leave a question about magic, mysticism, witchcraft, demonology, whatever it may be, whatever's on your mind. Just ask the question in the comments to the Ask Lee videos and I will add it to the list. All right, so today we're going to look at a question from Deborah regarding the dying, death, the blessed dead, etc., etc. Okay, on to Deborah's question. I have a question. Good thing, because this is the Ask Lee slot. how do you view the death of a human being? Where does the soul go? Do and why do some spirits of a deceased person stay behind? Okay, so the whole topic of death, dying, the blessed dead, the beloved dead, souls that remain behind, where the soul goes, what the soul is. You know, you're going to get a variety of different questions from a lot of different people, depending on culture, depending on their upbringing, depending on their tradition. So, you know, you did ask how do I view it, so I can only really give you my view. And concerning that, you know, this is one of those topics, again, that kind of develops throughout a lifetime. You know, your understanding of it, your perception of it, your own belief in it. So this really is still developing in me. I have come to some conclusions, but ask me in 10 years' time and you'll probably find that they're completely different, or at least somewhat different and developed from what they are now. Okay, so there's really three questions here, so let's handle them one at a time. How do you view the death of a human being? Okay, death of a human being is just a next step onto the cycle. It's opening the next door within your existence. So you get born into the world, that's just a step through a doorway into the continuation of our existence. We go through life and then we walk through the next door. So it's just really a continuation of a cycle. What I would like to bring in here is the what happens at the moment of death. I pull my belief here from a variety of sources, but the soul or the spirit, depending on how we define that, needs to disconnect from the body, from the physical body, because the physical body is going to disintegrate. Now, that happens over a long period of time. If the soul is not disconnected from the body after death, like within 48 hours, it kind of gets stuck until the body disintegrates, and then the soul kind of floats around. You know, there is a belief that there's the opening or doorway, portal, or whatever we want to call that, that kind of stays open for 48 hours after the person dies in order for the soul to go through to the other world, whatever we want to call that. Lots of names for all these things, lots of titles. So if the soul is not properly disconnected from the body at that within that period, then the door closes and the soul is then stuck to the physical body until it completely disintegrates, and then it can be free, but then it's got to try and find its way through that doorway, try and find another way through to the other world. So there are various ceremonies. I know somebody might be watching this. I know they're a subscriber who is a death doula. I would love to hear your opinions on this. In fact, we should probably have a discussion about it at some stage. So we have our physical body, as we know it, has a network of energy lines, nadis, meridians running through the entire body. And this is almost like a nervous system. So we have all these lines of energy which connect things, which feed and move energy between the organs and throughout the entire body. We also have the chakras that we speak of from Hindu tradition. But whether you go from Hindu or to Europe or wherever, there is some belief in energy centers within the body, which are, I don't really want to call them power points, but it's the easiest word to use, are points of power. They are where a lot of these energy lines come together and form almost like a closed circuit. I'm not really what sure what words and terms to use here, but I think you kind of get my understanding. And people have a general understanding of the chakras, so I don't want to get too much into that anyway. But we have these power points, and this is where all that energy comes and merges. And at the point of death, there's various rituals that various traditions go through, or various cultures, that release the energy that's in these centers. And through that release, it kind of releases, progressively releases the soul from the physical body, so that it can then move out and it can then go through this doorway, which is open. So there is that to consider and keep in mind. Obviously, it's not something we do in our Western society. Somebody dies, we do all the ceremony, the usual ceremonies of going through the burial and stuff like that. But there's no consideration of releasing the spiritual body from the physical body. There are prayers that are done. In the Christian church, pray for the dead and things like that. But it's not. I don't think it's the same, quite the same thing. So anyway, so there's this release that has to happen. Let me just have a look at the next question. There was, where does the soul go? So this, ooh, big question there. Huge. Where does it go? It goes into a nothingness. It goes back into the cosmic soup, unless it gets stuck behind. And this is part of the next question, so I'll go into that in more detail there. I can only speak from my own understanding and my own experience. 22 years ago, well, almost 23 years ago now, I did have a near-death experience, so I died and I just became nothing. Absolutely nothing. It wasn't just a void place, void of anything, and I was just floating around there. I became that nothingness. So I didn't know my name. I didn't even know I was human because I wasn't. In that place, you are nothing. Therefore, you're not a human. You're not an animal. You're not anything. So it was this complete and utter nothingness. What's beyond that, I don't know, because I I brought myself back, or I was brought back. Difficult to say. In that space, in that moment, it was almost like a battle. I had to try and remember that I was once human, that I had a body, that I was married and had a child. I had to try and remember what my name was. One of the things that helped me was the fact that I always joke about this. That I had cornflakes for breakfast that morning. I always say cornflakes saved my life. I had to try and remember all these little details of a human existence in order to bring my awareness, which I didn't even have awareness there. And there was just this pinprick, this inkling of awareness that I could hold on to. If I'd let go of that, I would have gone completely over. So there was this awareness that I could hold on to, and that was the awareness that I started to then build on and then bring myself back. So where does the soul go after death? Immediately after death, into a nothingness, a complete and utter void, and just a non-existence. But at the same time, it's not a non-existence because everything is existing. It's that nothingness that I speak of when I talk about the divinity, the divine, God, the mind, all the great architects, Tao, etc., etc. It's that I speak about it being everything and nothing, and it's that nothing that you go into. So we can't define it, we can't really speak about it, we can't explain it, we can't bring it into any kind of conscious realization. It just is. But that's where I think the soul goes. And I think that the continuation of that process is then you go back into the cosmic soup, if that's not the cosmic soup itself. The cosmic soup is a heathen, Celtic, and I do believe also falls into Hindu belief, but unfortunately I haven't been able to find any evidence of that. I just heard it mentioned on one of Peter Padden's podcasts when he was talking about the cosmic soup and the Celtic understanding of it. Just mentioned that it ties into Hinduism. Can't find evidence of it though. I'm still searching for that. So the cosmic soup is a big swirling mass of energy, and everything goes into it. So we die, we go into the cosmic soup, and we get mixed up with everyone and everything, animals, plants, stones, all of the souls and the spirits of everything. Remember that traditional witchcraft is animistic, so everything has a soul. So we get mixed up, and then at some point clump of it gets pulled out and put into a new person or a new animal or a new stone, whatever it is. I mean, we talk about this as being a linear process, but as we know, time's not real. There is no linear time. It's all lateral, so it's all happening at the same time. But in order for us to understand it and comprehend it, we have to think in linear terms. So the body dies, the person dies, the soul comes out, is released, goes through to this cosmic soup, is mixed up with everything else, and then a clump of that's pulled out and put into something else. And that thing that gets pulled out could be a mixture of many, many different souls, including plants and animals and stones and rocks and birds and everything. In this understanding, a lot of understandings, a lot of traditions go with the idea of having a pure soul. So when we die, we have a soul which comes out of our body, it goes through a particular process, and then it gets rebirthed into another body, physical body, in order to continue the learning process, the existence of that soul. And that's the idea of a pure soul, which just comes out, goes through a process, gets transported into another body. That's something I used to believe in, but something that I have evolved out of into this idea of the cosmic soup. As I said, in 10 years' time, my viewpoints would have probably changed, or altered, or grown, or evolved, or something. But this is what my understanding of it now. Right, enough on that one. The last question there: do and why do spirits of a deceased person stay behind? Okay, so the first reason is they may get fixed to the physical body, in which case they haven't been allowed to move on or over or through the doorway into the other world, into the cosmic soup. And actually, coming back to the cosmic soup and that part there, you know, there's a whole lot of other things that we can bring into this. We become the ancestors, we become the fae. So there is that whole ancestral aspect as well. It all gets mishy-mashy and timey-wimey and mucky and stuff like that. There's lots of overlaps. There's lots of things to try and separate, but we can't really separate them because nothing is separate. So to try and put it into terms that we can comprehend becomes rather difficult. But we try anyway. So that's one of the reasons. The soul may get stuck to the physical body and therefore the physical realm. In the same regard, the soul may become fixed to a personal place. They may have some unfinished business that they need to get done before they can move on. But in some cases, they may get so fixed to another person, it's usually somebody they love incredibly dearly, and they don't want to leave them. So they often get attached to the person. And unfortunately, although it's not the intention of the dead person, this can cause physical ailments, usually back pain, migraines, however we want to say that, and very, very quite intense problems with the central nervous system, because usually they're attached to the central nervous system, and they function through that manner. So this can cause a lot of physical ailments for a person. So in working with that, what I usually do is I run energy through the spine, through the central nervous system, and slowly, easily release that energy of the dead person. Try and detach it, but not forcefully, because they're not trying to do harm. It's just they love the person so much. So you ease that energy off, and then you kind of explain to them what's happened, and then you guide them through. Now, another reason somebody may stay behind is in order to become a land guardian. In older traditions, witchcraft traditions, traditional witchcraft, etc., we find that some of the ancestral spirits become land spirits or land guardians, and that's usually to protect a portion of land which is sacred to a family. So there are various reasons why somebody would stay behind, either intentionally or not intentionally. But quite often it is that case of loving someone too much, loving a place too much, not having or having business, unfinished business, or just simply wasn't able to detach from the physical body. We also get the case of phantasms. Now, my understanding of a phantasm is we have this imprint of ourselves, of our own ego, and upon death, the physical body and the spirit or the soul, the spiritual body, they separate. But there's also the ego, and the ego is another body, and this also gets released from the physical body, but it stays behind in a form of a phantasm. It's a bit like an echo, but it contains, because it is the ego or was the ego, it contains all of the memories of the person that it was. Therefore, we see ghosts, and usually these ghosts are in physical form, dressed as they would have in life, and haunting a place, but having the memories. So if we do speak to them and contact them, they still have the memories and the personality of the person they were. So we can speak to them in regards to that. So that for me is what I call the phantasm. It's the egoic echo of the person who was. So yeah, I think that covers basically everything. It's a huge topic, it really is, and there's so much you can look into in regards to different traditions and cultures, and their own beliefs, and it's a fascinating topic. It's a topic that I absolutely love. So if you do want to discover more, find out from other people, because my views are definitely not the only views. There are thousands, millions of different views. I think everybody would have their own view of this. There's going to be overlaps to their own cultural beliefs and things like that, but I think everybody will formulate their own belief if they think about it enough, if they consider it enough. A lot of people don't like to talk about death. They don't like to think about death because it's something which has been given this negative taint. So a lot of people don't even want to consider it until the last minute type of thing. But I think it's something that we should discuss more and think about, and not just that, not just what happens to the soul and things like that. I think we need to bring the discussion of death into our culture and into our daily lives. I'm not saying talk about it every single day, but it needs to become something that we're comfortable with, and we're comfortable discussing and talking about, and coming to our own understandings of what death and the process of death is. But as I said, not just the what happens to the soul and what happens to the body and what a ghost is and all these things, but also what happens to the people that get left behind, helping them with their own grief, but also the legal aspects. If anybody has had to deal with a family member dying, a mother or a father, or a spouse, or a child, there's a whole lot of legal aspects regarding the state and how the bank accounts get tied up for months, even years. I think we need to talk about it from every single angle, and we need to understand what happens to the state, what happens to the people that get left behind. Because a lot of people, they have this death in the family, and then they have to deal with all the legal stuff whilst they're grieving. And it becomes an absolute nightmare. And even if lawyers were involved and there's a will involved, it still gets tied up. And it can take months and years. And there's a huge expense that comes with burials and things like that. And these things are not considered. And up until that point, when the person has to deal with all these legal aspects, they're not prepared. There is no way they are prepared for this because they haven't thought about it. They haven't discussed it with anybody before. So they just get thrown into this battle, and they have to come up with all of this money to cover expenses of medical bills, of the burial ceremonies, whether it's a burial, whether it's a cremation, there's costs involved, and they're extensive. They are exorbitant sometimes. And sometimes people have a burial fund or something which they've been keeping through their life. But half the time, that doesn't even cover a third of the costs. And then the bank account gets tied up of the person, so the medical aides can't access the funds, so it has to be paid out from someone else, until it can all be released. And as I said, that can take months and years. There are ways to get around it, but as I said, these are things that we need to discuss. So preparation. It's really preparation of what happens when you die. And it's not just preparation of your own soul and where you go and what happens to you. It's also preparation for your loved ones who are being left behind, and the nightmare that they will have to go through whilst they are trying to grieve and whilst they are trying to get over your own death. So think about those things, and take it from there. All right, so that's it for today. Thank you for watching and listening to me go on and on, and have a good one. Cheers for now. Bye bye. This podcast was brought to you by, myself, Lee W. Johnson. To find out more about me, please visit my website at leewjohnson.com or check out my link tree in the description of this podcast. If you like the video format, then subscribe to my YouTube channel, where I also host a live show every Friday with Rev Kai called the Black Hat Chat. It's just two witches chatting about traditional witchcraft and other topics. That's me for this week. Hope to hear from you soon. Thanks for listening.